Good morning. KPCW News Time is 8:06. I'm Roger Goldman. Well, let's see if this beautiful day continues. We will have a report now from Cedric Haynes with ABC 4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday, Wasatch back. It's time for a look at your forecast as we move into your Friday and the weekend. The good news is we're going to be starting off with mostly sunny skies as we go throughout your Friday afternoon. One thing you're going to notice with that southerly flow, we're going to see some of that smoke and haze drifting north from southern Utah. So we will notice some smoky and hazy skies by the time we get towards your Friday afternoon. That's really going to be your only real weather issue, though, as high temperatures will likely climb into the low to mid 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 80s to near 90 as we get into your Friday afternoon. Let's talk about that weekend forecast as we get into your Saturday. We're looking at partly cloudy skies. Temperatures starting off into the upper 40s to low 50s will jump into the low to mid 80s for Park City with those partly sunny skies. We'll see the temperatures climbing to around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley again. So warm, but kind of expected as we get towards this late July time frame. As we go into your Sunday, you guessed it, more sunshine expected out there. Temperatures starting off in the 40s and low 50s and will climb into the mid 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 90s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we kick off next week, we're going to kick things off on a slightly warmer note. So we'll see those high temperatures with lots of sunshine climbing into the upper 80s to around 90 in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 90s in the Heber Valley. We'll stay with those mid to upper 80s in Park City as we go into your Tuesday with partly sunny skies, and we'll see those highs in the Heber Valley still climbing into the mid 90s as we go towards your Tuesday afternoon. By Wednesday, we'll call it partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of a few isolated showers and storms developing. Yeah, we could use the moisture, and there are some signs by the latter half of next week heading into the following weekend, beginning of August, that we could see a little moisture finally returning to the area. As we see on your Wednesday, high temperatures will be into the low to mid 80s due to the extra clouds and an isolated shower in Park City. Highs will be around 90 in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your forecast for the Wasatch back heading into the weekend. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, I'll be speaking with Katrina Barker of Planned Parenthood of Utah about their recent litigation. Then I will be joined by Jennifer Bowman of Wasatch County Parks and Recreation about Wasatch County Fair Days. We're going to finish our hour by speaking with Sarah Irvin, the KPCW's Development Director, about our current emergency pledge drive. Then after this hour is complete, we'll have a community campfire. This week, Bucking Bills, Championship Dreams, and Family Grit collide in Daniel, Utah for a rough and rowdy rodeo story with heart. Then we're going to go behind the mic and meet KPCW's Wednesday morning DJ, Rudy Tesno, better known as Rudy on the Radio. The Campfire Music Sesh features local artist Wyatt Pike, who previews his latest release, and Coach Skinner has the skinny on sports. And the Campfire Kids entertain as always. Community Campfire coming up this morning at 9, right after this broadcast. The developer proposing a mixed-use project at the base of Silver Creek Estates is asking Summit County for a special exception. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains.
Columbus Pacific development partner Tony Tyler wants to build housing, a childcare facility, and potentially a grocery store on the west side of Silver Creek Road at Interstate 80. He asked the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission about a special exception July 8th. He says the project would better fit the community if he's allowed lenience with a niche part of the development code, setbacks. Area zoning and code determines setback requirements, or for example, how far a building is from the road or other buildings. Tyler showed planning commissioners what his project would look like if it complied with minimum setbacks, a terrible layout, in his words.
So even though we created it, you know, with the help of our architect, I don't want to build something like this because I think it's a disservice to the community.
He also showed them smaller setbacks, which he says would allow for a better layout on his land. Otherwise, he said he'd need to build higher or cut the child care center. Maps of the contrasting layouts are available at kpcw.org. Tyler previously downsized his proposal from its first iteration, which had up to 200 housing units. Now he's aiming for 96, 24 of them affordable. Either way, he needs the Summit County Council to rezone the land from rural residential to community commercial before the project can move forward. Tyler says he'll continue to meet with planners on the details before they make a recommendation to the county council. Summit County and Columbus Pacific are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Colville City is implementing water restrictions to help combat drought conditions and a significant shortage of secondary water. In a message to Colville residents, Mayor Mark Marsh said the Public Works team is trying to maintain water levels in a local pond while the flow from Chalk Creek has diminished over the past 3 weeks. He said that means residents must conserve water. Colville locals will now follow an odd even watering schedule. Residents with odd numbered addresses can water Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Even numbered addresses get to water Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Water is prohibited from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and is not allowed at all on Sundays. Marsh shared other ways to help, like watering overnight so it soaks in instead of evaporating, and growing longer grass so it shades the soil and retains moisture. Well, the Utah chapter of Planned Parenthood obtained a preliminary injunction, was among the parties that obtained a preliminary injunction this week in Boston. On the phone to explain the lawsuit and the implications of the ruling is Katrina Barker of Utah Planned Parenthood. Good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Katrina, what caused PPAU to join the lawsuit, and what's it about?
Yeah, so in July, or beginning of July, July 4th, the president signed a bill as part of the federal budget reconciliation, and that bill included a provision that cuts Planned Parenthood health centers out of Medicaid. So what that means is that patients who have Medicaid insurance cannot go to Planned Parenthood to get the care. And for many Medicaid patients, Planned Parenthood is their trusted healthcare provider. That's where they go to get their birth control, their STI tests, their wellness exams, their cancer screenings. And it's a really big deal to cut millions of people out of going to the healthcare provider they want to go to. So Planned Parenthood Federation of America, along with Planned Parenthood of Massachusetts and us, Planned Parenthood Association of Utah, filed a lawsuit to challenge this unconstitutional law. And we were granted an immediate block, a temporary restraining order, and then on Monday, a preliminary injunction, a partial preliminary injunction was granted. It does cover Utah, so Medicaid patients in Utah can continue coming to Planned Parenthood health centers, but it does not cover every Planned Parenthood health center in the entire country.
So does it also cover Massachusetts? I'm a little confused. We have the national organization and the two branches. Was the object of the litigation to try to cover the entire nation?
Yes. So because Planned Parenthood Federation of America, they were filing on behalf of all members, so all Planned Parenthoods across the country. But the two named plaintiffs are Massachusetts and Utah. And that's because we represent certain kind of like different criteria around this Medicaid law. So here in Utah, we actually see fewer Medicaid patients than many other states. And that's for a lot of reasons, but partially because it's pretty difficult to get Medicaid here in Utah. And so we see under the threshold that the law was written for. So it says, the law says you have to bill more than 800,000. And we actually bill less than 800,000 to Medicaid. And so that's part of why we are in the lawsuit. Massachusetts is a state where they have very high Medicaid enrollment, and their Planned Parenthood sees a lot of Medicaid patients.
And that was one of the things that was confusing when we get to the decision, was the $800,000. If Utah was already under $800,000, why would the law as written affect you?
Yeah, so this is where the lawyers are really making their argument, because the law was written so that all Planned Parenthoods fall under one umbrella. And that they're claiming that every Planned Parenthood is one entity. You know, I mean, I am not a lawyer, so I'm not giving you all the legal terms. But in the gist of it is that is kind of what the government was arguing, and our lawyers are arguing that shouldn't be the case, and that we are separate entities because we are legal separate entities, each Planned Parenthood. And so, you know, here in Utah, we are under that 800,000, and the judge did see it that way. And granted the injunction for us.
And I suppose the fact that the Medicaid programs are all separate might also play some role in this with separate
reimbursement.
Absolutely. Yep. I want to know, okay, so let's go through what the court decided and what are the implications here in Utah.
Yeah, so the biggest thing to know is that right now, Medicaid patients can continue coming to Planned Parenthood health centers in Utah. This is an ongoing case. It is confusing and it is complicated. But we just want patients here in Utah to know that our doors are open and they can come to us and they can keep getting their birth control, their cancer screenings, their STI tests, and they can use their Medicaid to come to us.
Now, I assume that some of the reason that Planned Parenthood was targeted was the related to the abortion issues, which I assume relates to some states. Is that overtly part of this, or is that sort of beside the point?
It is, yes. So this is definitely a target attack on Planned Parenthood because Planned Parenthood provides abortion. And they are attempting to shut down Planned Parenthood health centers because they use patients with Medicaid come to them. Even though Medicaid does not pay for abortion, except for in very, very, very rare circumstances. So what they're prohibiting is basic preventative health care. Their intended consequence is to shut down health centers to reduce access to abortion. That is part of what makes this so frustrating. Mm-hmm. And also something, it goes back to the fact that a California Planned Parenthood, where Medicaid is a huge part of the healthcare system there, their state pays a lot into Medicaid. Many, many patients are on Medicaid. And California is also an access state where many people can get, go to get an abortion even from outside of California. And so if you cut millions and millions of dollars from those health centers, they still can't provide the care that they're, intending. What happens is this becomes a backdoor abortion ban. Here in Utah, abortion is still legal and we can still see our Medicaid patients. So we are actually in some ways really lucky to be a bit of a unicorn, honestly, in the landscape of this whole country and the way that the different state laws are interacting.
So is the litigation over for the other states by the court's refusal to grant the preliminary? Okay, what happens from here?
No. Yeah, so this is still ongoing. There are, motions being filed, appeals on both sides. So there is still a possibility that the judge could extend the injunction, and we, hope that that could happen. And in any case, the case will continue. So, injunctions are just the first step in many lawsuits because the intention is to prevent harm by blocking these laws from going into effect while the lawsuit proceeds. And the judge agreed that we have a strong case and that there is real harm being done here. And so there is still hope that the injunction could be extended or the TRO could be extended for those other states. And we just have to wait and see. So it is evolving. And, in the meantime, we are here providing care.
Okay, so we have a preliminary injunction, which I assume is going to get appealed to the First Circuit. In order to obtain a permanent injunction, as I understand it, there'd actually have to be a trial. And is there any sort of scheduling or any timeline when you expect this case to move to the next stage?
No, we do not know yet. Okay. So that is all to be determined.
Okay. Has anyone filed appeals yet of the preliminary? It's pretty quick, I realize.
I am not totally sure on that. Okay. There's been appeals at different stages, like they appealed the TRO, but I'm not totally up to speed on every appeal at this point.
Okay. So, while I have, anything else you want to touch on about the lawsuit? Because I have some other questions.
No, I think we covered it.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit, while I have you on the phone, let's talk about the services that Planned Parenthood does provide to Medicaid beneficiaries. What are the range of services that you make, healthcare services that you make available to Medicaid beneficiaries and other patients?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. So, obviously we are known as the experts in sexual and reproductive health care. And so birth control, STI tests and treatment, we provide vasectomy, we provide cervical cancer screenings, pap tests, we can do some other extended cervical cancer treatments. You can come and get a UTI screening and get treatment for that. We have some vaccines. So it's really very basic preventative reproductive health care. And we're really proud of that, and we are the experts in that area. There really is no other healthcare provider that specializes in this way that Planned Parenthood does.
And how many locations do you have throughout Utah?
We have 6 locations here in Utah, 1 in Ogden, there's 4 in the Salt Lake area, and then there's 1 in Utah County.
And you mentioned that 800,000 numbers that you were below. Approximately how many Medicaid beneficiaries do you see a year, and about how much do you receive in Medicaid funding?
Yeah, so that 800,000 was for fiscal year 23. We were at about 700,000 for that year. And I believe the numbers, I don't have them in front of me, are, 2,000-ish a year in patients with Medicaid. So it's pretty small percentage-wise for us. It's about 5-6% of our patients.
Now, does this put you into an interesting sort of kabuki dance where you don't want to see more than $750,000 or $780,000 of Medicaid beneficiaries, or SNAP, the thing goes back to zero?
Yeah, that's you know, we have not gotten to that point of having to think quite that far ahead. At this point, it does feel like it would be unlikely that we would go over that 800,000. But yeah, that's certainly something to keep in mind.
Okay. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No, thank you so much for having me. And we want to shed light on this and let patients know that our doors are open and anyone can come to us. We take insurance. We have sliding fee scale for those who are self-pay, and we are really there for the community as much as we can be.
Okay. We've been speaking to Katrina Barker of Utah Planned Parenthood. Thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
The Heber City Planning Commission said it has some concerns about a proposal to create a food truck court downtown. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has the details.
Matt Hansen says his vacant lot at the intersection of First West and First South in downtown Heber would be a good spot for a temporary food truck court. Eventually, he wants to construct a multi-story mixed-use building on the site. But in the meantime, about 5 years, he's asking the city for permission to park up to 8 food trucks there. The proposal also includes a small parking lot, temporary restrooms, and seating for diners. Heber City's Planning Commission considered a development agreement for Hansen's idea at its meeting July 22nd. City staff said the plan would require exceptions to Heber's normal landscaping, lighting, and parking standards. They said traffic impacts, stormwater, street improvements, and accessibility are other concerns. Civil engineer Mike Johnston asked the commission to consider being flexible with the application to promote creating more places for people to visit downtown.
If they have to pay impact fees or they have to do more than minimal ADA paving, it doesn't make any sense financially. Zero sense. And it'll just sit there as an empty lot with dirt piles, unless you can come up with a better idea.
Johnston, who's also a city council member, said he will recuse himself if the plans come to the council for a vote. He said he is not worried about traffic. He thinks most people go to food trucks spontaneously.
And they generally see it and stop, or they walk over there for lunch. It's the same trip traffic. It's already going somewhere, and they just stop and grab something from the food truck.
He compared the proposal to a large food truck court in downtown Moab. But some neighbors near the site are less enthusiastic about the idea. Carl Merriweather said he and his family are opposed to the proposal because they don't want portable restrooms and a dumpster right next to their laundromat. He said he also worries about noise and people using his land.
Currently, even from the farmers market, we get people to park in our parking lot. We have to throw signs up. We're constantly telling them, hey, this is for our own business. And we get very rude comments.
Shelley Ryan, who owns Chick's Cafe on Main Street, worried the food trucks would negatively affect her restaurant.
Well, it's just like the park. They all come to Chick's to pee. Don't buy a thing. They're going to do the same thing. And you guys are just doing a line of bull.
Other residents had questions or concerns about late night noise, pests from food trash, pedestrian access, and more. Planning Commissioner Tori Broughton said she thought many of those issues could be addressed.
I think that there are things that we can add to this development agreement that would really limit the negative impact that it would have on the surrounding neighbors.
She said the agreement would need a clear definition of temporary and requirements for curb and gutter improvements. And Johnston proposed reassessing the agreement after 2 years to address any issues that might arise. After the discussion, the Planning Commission still had some hesitations. Commissioners asked planning staff to revise the draft development agreement. They plan to revisit the food truck proposal at a meeting in August. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, Wasatch County Fair Days are upon us. On the phone to talk about all the activities coming up is Jennifer Bowman of the Wasatch County Parks and Recreation. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Just fine, thank you. It's a beautiful day. Fair Days, they include a wide range of activities. I want to run through some of them with you. Let's start with my favorite, the Demolition Derby. When and where will it start?
Absolutely. So it actually kicked off last night. This is our first year of a three-day show. Our residents and locals said, we want more tickets available. So, you know, what do? We add a day. So last night was wild. We did a 4-on-4 team show format. So that'll go today and tomorrow as well, in a bracket style. And it is some of the hardest hitting you will ever see. But tonight promises to be a lot the same.
Now, do any of these vehicles survive well enough to be able to go a second night? I mean, or is that how it works? Or do you have all new sets of vehicles tonight?
No, so there's a little bit of both. A lot of these vehicles, you would be blown away at how much they actually cost. Some of these harder cars, the more well-built cars, are anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000, from drivetrain to all the metal that goes into them for safety cages and roll bars and whatnot. So last night's round, there were four heats of the team show, so eight total teams. They are currently in the pits getting ready to start torching, welding, changing broken parts, doing the best they can in a dirt parking lot to get those cars ready for showtime again tonight.
And who are the participants? I'm fascinated by the psychology of someone who chooses to participate in a demolition derby.
Right, right. Well, getting into multiple car wrecks over and over within a 15-minute period is, they're a special breed for sure.
Are many of them local?
Yeah. So this year we actually have more locals than ever. We have just under 200 cars registered for the show. 72 of which are local to Wasatch County, and then just over 120, including those Wasatch County residents, that are local to Utah specifically. We do have drivers coming as far as upstate New York. We have a couple Canadians. You know, they come from all over.
Okay, so there's a competition format. Is there a prize at the end?
A nice monetary prize. There are different classes, so there are different heats, different build types. There's a powder puff heat tonight, which is girls only. There's also a beginner youth heat, which is 12 to 15 year olds. Many of them, it's their first derby. But at the end of the show, the entire payout is $200,000.
My goodness.
In
order for that to make sense, you guys have to sell a lot of tickets. Is the event very popular?
It is. We sell out within a matter of minutes typically. This year, the public asked for us to go to an in-person ticket sale to help make tickets more accessible. So 3-day show, in-person ticket sale. We actually had some tickets left for sale at the door last night, but the next two nights are completely sold out.
So there are other sort of competitions that you're sponsoring, and I take it the Powder Wheels Derby is not quite the same degree of kinetic energy.
It is not quite. Little bit of a shift change there. but we like to call them the future of demolition derby. They are anywhere from 2 or 3 years old all the way up to about 8. Parents go out there, they bring their Power Wheels. Some are outfitted, some are stock. And the kids go out, have a great time, kind of get the feel of being in the spotlight.
And what are these vehicles, these Power Wheels?
So they're just like the little, you can buy them at Walmart in the bike section usually. They're just little battery-operated.
Do they smack into each other?
They really do.
They lose parts.
Yep.
As soon as kids go out with helmets, and then they... You know, it's interesting. You've got that many parents who are willing to let their kids trash their power wheels.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of the parents are also drivers themselves.
Yeah.
And, it's a culture thing. It's special to them.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay, and when is that?
It is. So we have one more, and that'll be tonight after the third heat. So anybody with a ticket is welcome to bring a Power Wheels for their kid. we're just about sold out, so I think we can have about 10 more people come for tonight. But it's usually fun. It's a fun event, a little bit of a change of pace and kinetic energy, like you said.
Okay. I saw another item on the website that caught my eye, which is something called mutton busting. I have no idea what that is.
So that is going to be during our rodeo, which is next week. It's going to be Thursday, July 31st through August 2nd. It's the Mountain Valley Stampede Rodeo. And on all three nights, it is, you know, kind of the precursor for kids' rodeo. So they'll get, you know, 3 to about 6 or 8 year olds on the back of a sheep. And the sheep comes out of a bucking chute and jets down the arena, and the kid to hold on the longest is the winner.
So it's bucking sheep, essentially, is what you're telling me.
It's basically, yeah. I mean, sheep don't really buck, per se, but they can get a little squirrely. And, you know, it's a fun introduction to rodeo for the youngsters.
Okay, and let's talk about the full-size rodeo. That was sort of my segue. The rodeo is what nights next week?
That'll be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
And
The 31st, 1st, and 2nd.
Full range of traditional rodeo activities. For those people who aren't familiar with it, what are some of the things you'll see?
Absolutely. It'll start with, the evening kicks off with, of course, our traditional fair festivities, such as, introducing our queens and rodeo royalty, our grand marshals. And then it goes right into bronc riding. The first event of the evening is bronc riding, so definitely want to have people in their seats for that. Goes all the way through tie-down roping, team roping, barrel racing, kind of all those rodeo events, and ends with bull riding.
And again, who are these people? Are there rodeo vagabonds who sort of travel the country participating in these events, or are these mostly local?
These are the real deal. Many of the participants that come here actually make it to the NFR in Las Vegas. So we really do pull. We have a great rodeo pull. Local, a lot of local talent, but also well known names. We don't get the lists until probably early next week, but they're usually, it's a great lineup.
Significant prize money for them as well.
Yes. The PRCA kind of dictates what is paid per event, but we do an added $20,000 per event, which is a huge draw for those bigger name contestants.
No wonder you get big name contestants.
Okay, exactly.
You mentioned the queens and the grand marshal. Let's do them one at a time.
Yeah.
Who's the grand marshal and how was that person or people selected?
Yeah, so this year it's Ed and Marie Sabe. They're local to Charleston, and they are just the epitome of, good neighbors, wonderful people, willing to help out anywhere possible. And there is a committee. It's a portion of the fair board. Names are selected and it's basically submitting a resume and kind of going through and picking who best, the best candidate to represent Wasatch County and Wasatch County Fair Days.
Okay. And then we have the queens. Is there some kind of pageant to select those people?
Absolutely. So we have two queens represented, a few queens represented at our rodeo and derby, but we have the Miss Wasatch and the Miss Heber Valley. So that would be a separate contest from the rodeo royalty, which is the Mountain Valley Stampede rodeo royalty. And again, we have, queens, junior queens, princesses, and junior princesses. We have a lot of very very helpful young ladies helping with our events.
And they'll be presented at the beginning of the rodeo?
Yes. Okay. Yep. The rodeo royalty comes in on horseback, and then the queens come in on in the beds of trucks usually, or side by sides.
Fantastic. Okay. We talked about some of the events. I assume there's also going to be a carnival with food that tastes good and is horribly bad for you?
Absolutely. I mean, that's summer.
Funnel cake.
Exactly. We have the thing we all look forward to. So the carnival and country market start Wednesday, July 30th and run through Saturday, August 2nd. You'll view the full schedule on our website at wasatchparksandrec.com. But part of our fair days is this year's old-fashioned fun. The thought behind that is, get our neighbors together, get our friends together, and just plain have some old-fashioned fun. Ride a Ferris wheel together, eat three funnel cakes, and just that throwback to simple, and fun.
Okay, so and give us the hours for sort of the midway and carnival.
Yeah, so the carnival timing does change slightly. Day to day, but opening day is open 4 to 10 p.m. And then July 31st is noon to 10 p.m. as well as Friday. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, lots of days. and then Saturday, the final day, is actually 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay, and I think I forgot something important, which is, will there be a livestock auction?
There will be.
Okay,
this is This is one of the biggest in the state. It is, you know, I actually don't have a number of animals that are entered, but there's showmanship classes. There are, you know, weigh-ins, and all of the animals have to make weight for presenting, but they'll go to auction, basically. So they'll auction, you know, like a beef, they'll auction it per pound, you know, 50 cents per pound. Next bidder will be 75 cents per pound. But all of this money goes towards that child and their education and, you know, possibly future livestock. But it is a really, really wonderful event. These kids put in a lot of effort, everything from rabbit and chicken showmanship all the way up to goat, beef, swine. There a lot of animals come through. And that the auction itself, or the sale, is 9 a.m. on Saturday, August 2nd.
And so these animals are all raised by children. What's the age limit for the children?
You know, that I actually don't know.
I stumped you.
I know it. You did stump me. usually high school age children, middle and high school age children. Yeah. Again, I don't know the exact ages, okay. But
middle and high school.
Yeah, they do put in a lot of effort.
Okay, what else have I forgotten to ask you about, or neglected to ask you about, in terms of fun things at the fair?
Yeah, as far as the Derby goes, we are sold out for the next two nights, but it is available on a pay-per-view this year through WeCrash.tv, right? and it's just $20 a night to watch. So, you know, sit home and grab a lemonade and some popcorn and, you know, watch the show from home. Then we have, starting next Monday, we go into our exhibit check-ins, and that's always an awesome, awesome thing to walk through. But Monday we'll do our party in the park, which is free hot dogs, and there's a talent find as well. Then Tuesday we have our pool party at the Wasatch Aquatic Center. That one's usually a really fun time. It's free for all to attend. And then Wednesday we go into a little bit more of a robust fair day activity. We'll start with some entertainment. We have a $5 barbecue, and it is spectacular. One of the best meals around. And then it ends with an outdoor movie on one of our ball diamonds. And just each day is bigger, better. Thursday, the rodeo is spectacular. It's going to be local heroes night. We're going to be honoring some locals within multiple departments that just kind of make our valley go round. So definitely still tickets available for that. And it's a night not to miss. This year we've added a drone show. So it is, we're having a lot of fun with this year's fair days.
It does sound like it. And it does sound like there's all kinds of food that I shouldn't eat but would really love. Okay.
So you probably should.
Okay, Jennifer, anything else that we want to touch on before we go? And more importantly, where's the website where people can pick up anything they might have missed?
Absolutely. It's wasatchparksandrec.com. Right on the main page, there's a Fair Days button. We have a schedule. We have a lot more info on each of the activities, where they'll be, when they'll be. And also all of the other, you know, things we have going on, programming and special events and other upcoming rodeos or functions that the public can attend.
Jennifer Bowman of Wasatch County Parks and Recreation, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope you get those funnel cakes.
I'm planning on it. We'll be right back after this. Park Arts have repeatedly cited traffic congestion as the top problem facing the city. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on how Park City Council candidates want to solve the issue.
At a forum July 22nd, the eight candidates running for the two open seats on the Park City Council were asked what steps they would take to manage traffic flow on area roads. Diego Zagara said he'd like to find cheaper solutions and suggested the possibility of having reversible flex lanes.
Some cities have lanes that change direction in the morning so that more cars can come in freely, and then in the afternoon reverse them so that bottleneck that we see on 248 gets mitigated for. I'd love to try something like that or see how far that can go.
Beth Armstrong said Park City needs to reduce the amount of single occupancy vehicles.
And the best way to do that would be working with private-public partnerships with the major employers in town to do van pools, stopping at Richardson Flat, loading them up and bringing them in vans. There's only one real way to get people out of their cars, and that's to give them a better choice.
Danny Glasser said he'd like to test the reversible lane concept before making a major investment.
I think we also have to allow for Vail to develop the base of the mountain, because the truth is there's traffic that's coming internally because people are staying in Bear Hollow and driving across. So if we can allow for more people to stay at the mountain, that'll diminish that. I think we also have to look at incentivizing people to not drive in.
Ian Hartley said public transit should be the focus.
There comes a breaking point at which transit is more effective and it's more convenient than driving your car. I don't think we're there yet. I think it's on the horizon, especially with the Olympics. And in the meantime, we can try some scalable solutions, see what works, and grow that.
John Kenworthy said he'd like to expand park and ride options in the Quinns Junction area to keep vehicles out of the city core on powder days.
We are one of maybe two of the ski resorts between Alterra and Vail that have 1.2 million people within an hour drive from our ski resorts. This is going to continue to grow exponentially, and we have to address the massive amounts of people that buy those all-you-can-eat ski passes.
Molly Miller is looking forward to seeing the impact of bus rapid transit on State Route 224 and said she also supports exploring the flex lane concept.
I think a really critical piece of anything that we are able to move forward on is strengthening partnerships that have been weakened in recent years, regionally with UDOT and even federally. I think there are many options that we can take advantage of.
Incumbent Councilmember Jeremy Rubel said he'd like to build off the success of the Richardson Flat Park and Ride, which has seen bus ridership growth in recent years.
We need to follow the pattern of things that work, and we need to continue trying other things that we haven't tried yet. We've been moving forward with the Recreate 248 study, and our staff, especially in that department, has been doing an outstanding job coming forward with creative options. Some of those include flex lanes. Some of it's flex lanes just for transit, so you don't really have to worry about reversing it too much. You can do it through other patterns.
Incumbent Councilmember Tana Tolley said she'd like to move forward with building a parking and transit hub on the Gordo property, located along State Route 248 across from Richardson Flat Road.
They did bring up flex lanes, but I think we need to go back to this park once philosophy that we've talked about on council for the last few years. And it's ensuring that people can park in town or park outside of town and they can circulate through town without feeling like they are missing something.
A recording of the full candidate forum where candidates answered a variety of questions for over 2 hours can be found online at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, we at KPCW are in the midst of an emergency fund drive. Here with an update is Development Director Sarah Irvin. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Roger.
So, Sarah, why are we doing this emergency fund drive?
So, as our listeners now are well aware, and thank you for persisting with us as we share this news, but last week, after many months of deliberation, Congress took the final vote to formally rescind money for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I want to make a quick distinction between rescind and eliminate future funding. What happened last week was that Congress, at the urging of the White House, passed a bill that actually took back money that Congress had already appropriated for both the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and USAID. It was a combination rescission bill. For us, what that means is that's money that we at KPCW had budgeted around because that Congress had passed that money, or excuse me, passed that appropriations bill last year. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was always forward funded by 2 years. So we knew we would be receiving our CPB grant in the amount of $264,000 for the coming fiscal year, which for us starts September 1st, and the following fiscal year. So FY26 and FY27, we were assured we would be receiving this federal grant, and we budgeted around that. It'd be one thing if it was, you know, in 2 years this money will be eliminated and we can plan accordingly and budget accordingly 2 years out. But this was money that we knew we were receiving and had, you know, again, planned accordingly. So that's why we're calling this an emergency as opposed to, hey, you know, we're changing our budget 2 years out. So that's what rescission is. And we jumped right into action and started an emergency fundraiser on Friday morning.
Okay, so just so people can get a perspective, how significant is $264,000 in terms of our overall budget?
It is, I'm going to roughly call it 15%, okay. Anywhere between 14 to 16% of our budget, but 15% of our operating budget is in the form of a grant that we had received from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And that's obviously money we use to keep the lights on, to pay our reporting staff and our other staff. I guess lots of our budget is spent on, it's also what we pay for programming. I mean, there's a whole range of things we pay for. But if you think about what this means, like we're 3 weeks away, we have a budget that you guys had put together that assumed we would have this money because it had been appropriated. Mm-hmm. And now we've got, you know, a whole set of things that are baked into that. So it's a big hole.
It is. And, you know, of course, Juliana, our GM, is
who's undoubtedly listening, so don't say anything inappropriate.
She's working very closely with our board, our finance committee of the board, putting together, you know, a revised budget with the knowledge that, you know, this grant won't be coming in the fall. And we are looking at ways to create new efficiencies here at the station, looking at scaling back, you know, some of the events that maybe we had planned for the year ahead, looking for new partnerships in the community to support some of the events that we want to do. But, you know, the big piece of this is that the vast majority of our expenditures are for the people that run this station and the programming that you hear here locally. And I think I'd like to make a distinction between us and frankly other stations, which is that 81% of our daily programming between 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. is entirely local. It's the interviews that you do here on the local news hour. It's the music that you hear from our local voice DJs. You know, they're volunteering their time here at the station to play music. It's the local musicians that we feature. It's our public affairs shows that we produce in-house. It's the traffic updates. It's the weather updates. It's the, you know, Elk Crossing 224, you're not going to hear that anywhere else. And lately, of course, it's the road construction updates and how do you avoid traffic on I-80? How do you avoid traffic on 248 as you're heading in or out of town? These are things that KPCW brings to our listeners, and it takes people to do that.
You know, it's interesting. There are obviously a range of political views in this city, just as there are in the rest of the country. And I've spoken to several people who said to me, you know, Roger, I don't really support federal funding. But what you guys do locally is different. Are you hearing any of that during your fundraising drive?
We are, and we appreciate that very much. Of course, you know, everybody has views on how taxpayer dollars should be spent at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. And, you know, for many who don't feel that taxpayer funding should be going to public media, you know, that is absolutely what, that's what Congress felt as well at this point. And we are hearing from folks with that sentiment, but saying, you know what, I really value what you're doing locally, and I'm going to step up my support for what you're doing here at KPCW.
So that sentiment in a check is welcome.
Yes, absolutely. No, we are unbiased here, and we are, you know, frankly, focused on our mission of serving this community with local news and information. People can form their own opinions based on the news that we provide, which, you know, that's what we hope that they do, and they take action on issues locally and issues where they can make an impact. And our job is to inform them.
And to do things like the candidate forum we held on Monday. Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, you know, I went to and watched, you know, our employees. There's a lot of prep involved in that. There's a lot of setup. There's a lot of engineering. There's a lot of effort. And that's what we do for this community.
Exactly. And we had some great feedback from that forum. In fact, several donations came in that evening afterwards. I'd love to take a moment, if I may, Roger, to just kind of run through some of the really lovely messages that we've received, acknowledge some of the, you know, the reasons that people are giving to the station. We get messages, you know, just even like things like Shelley Pierce, it's always on in my car. Carol Wexler, it's my preferred station. You know, I value KPCW reporting is what Tracy Harden said, and I listen every morning. And, you know, these are the things that we like to hear from folks. We had some folks this morning who received the local, clicked through and immediately said, I've been reading this newsletter now for over a year and I've never donated. Now I'm making my first donation. That's fantastic, thank you. You know, these are the kinds of reasons that we hope people support the station, and we want to encourage that. We did set an ambitious goal for this week. It's not the full 264,000 that we're needing to, you know, fill that gap over a period of time, but we set the goal of $100,000 this week, and we are dangerously close. We had said through Sunday, I can let people know that if we hit our goal before then, we will let you know and we will stop asking for money on air. But I think we're at like 98,700 something. So there's a few heroes out there who I think are hearing this right now and could step up. We also had an amazing challenge from a donor in our community named Damian Lee. And he challenged 12 new people to join the Broadcasters Club, brand new members, and he would match that. So he would increase his yearly support for the station to $12,000 a year if 12 new people joined at the silver level. And Damian, if you're listening, I can tell you we're at 10.
Wow.
So we'd love to hear from more. And I want to make a special thanks to Peggy Bergman, was one of our earliest donors with an emergency relief donation here, as well as Will and Carol Hodgman reached out immediately before actually the rescission bill was formally passed. And they said, what can we do? And stepped in. And I know that they are an incredible source of support in this community for so many. Ruth Povinelli is another one who stepped in early prior to the formal rescission saying, you know, here's a gift. I want to make sure that you are in, you know, steady hands as you move through this budgetary challenge. And so big thanks to those folks and so many more who have stepped in with just incredible levels of support.
And I want to point out that when we talk about our budget, we obviously included in our budget the funds we anticipated raising from our regular fund drives. And we are still going to have to do that. And I know that you may, you know, you might get tired of asking for money. I just assume talk about the demolition derby. But this is a real unique event for us, and we will be back for Pledge Drive, and we'll have all kinds of fun premiums, and we'll have a good time, and we'll shake the tambourine and ring the bells.
It's true.
But, and we don't want you to say, gosh, they were just asking us. This is different. Mm-hmm. This is not like anything I've ever seen in my lifetime.
It's true, and we actually had made the decision prior to this moment in time to postpone our Pledge Drive by a month. We typically hold that summer Pledge Drive in August, and so for listeners who are sort of thinking, wait a second, I usually make my donations in August, you're more than welcome to make a quick donation now and then tune in September. We are hosting our summer pledge drive the week of September 8th. We're trying to, we moved it back primarily because the start of school has become a complicating factor for so many folks in town. You know, it's always fun to have, you know, the summer visitors here and entertaining folks and spending time with our summer visitors. But for folks who are here year round, that first week of school is really busy for a lot of our listeners and a lot of our supporters and a lot of our partners. And so we moved it back to the week after Labor Day, hoping that everyone has, you know, settled in back to sort of a regular cadence of life. And so starting September 8th, you'll be hearing from, you know, a variety of community partners who come on air with us to help fundraise for this station. And we are looking for local sponsors. So if you are a business in town and you're interested in supporting the station with your company, we would welcome you to join us as a sponsor of the Pledge Drive and come on air and get recognition for your valuable partnership with the station, as well as your support for local nonprofits, because we're still doing the free underwriting that they can earn. One other thing, sorry, may I mention, because people are looking for August, is that we are still hosting the Back Alley Bash. That is a community event that we absolutely love. We've been doing it for 40 plus years with Cole Sport, the Cole Sport KPCW Back Alley Bash. It will be Friday, August 22nd in City Park. It's an opportunity for us to really thank this incredible community for the way that they support us all year long. And we will have live music in the park with Free Dog and, Dude's new band, Silver King Mining Company, I think is what it's called. We will have all of the fun that we normally have because we planned that well ahead of time.
And just as a reminder for anyone who lives in Park City, when she says Labor Day, she's really talking about Miner's Day.
Yes.
Okay. Want to read one or two more messages before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see here. I just moved my screen over. Let's see here. Quality, local, and non-local news. I don't want that to go away. Thank you, Sarah Sorensen, for that information. Really appreciate the local coverage and keeping us all informed from Jason Ledyard. Thank you so much. Love the station. The reporters are great. The whole KPCW team does a great job keeping up with engaging and community needs, engaging content and community needs. That's from Ethel Preston. Thank you, Ethel, so much. And, you know, again, it's so much of this focus is local coverage. Longtime listener, love the local news. Longtime resident and former DJ at the station. Thank you, Douglas Allen Webster, for that. We've heard from a lot of longtime listeners, as well as, like I mentioned, maybe longtime listeners and readers that have not donated before, and they're stepping up with their first donation. We're so grateful for that.
And we here, you know, at KPCW are determined to provide, you know, non-biased, neutral coverage. And I'm going to hype Monday morning's Mountain Money, because I think this is an example of the kind of things we do. Monday morning, I'm going to have economist Dan Mitchell, who is from the Cato Institute, and he strongly believes in essentially the Laffer curve. He will argue that cutting tax rates, in fact, increases revenue. Many liberal economists disagree with that. So the following week, we'll have a liberal economist to respond to what Dan says. It's part of our series called Both Sides Now. But again, that we strive hard. Mm-hmm. There's criticism of NPR at a national level. We here at KPCW are determined to play it down the middle. And I certainly think we do a good job.
Yeah, and we encourage listeners, if you hear things here that, you know, you question, please let us know. We want to hear directly from you.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.